Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara and I am here running solo today. Devin was not able to join me. So we realized that earlier this week, and so I reached out to you guys with a question on Instagram and got a ton of feedback, which is awesome. But first, let me start with a quote. A tool is but the extension of a man's hand, and a machine is but a complex tool. And he that invents a machine augments the power of a man and the well-being of mankind. Now, I found that quote and I really like it, specifically because it talks about the fact that when you're inventing a machine or a tool, that you are augmenting the power of man and that you are augmenting and pushing forward the well-being of mankind. Now, in this day and age of tons of different types of technology and different tools, that's always one of those issues that's on the table when you talk to makers, right? What is a tool? Which tool should be used? How far do you push it? Now, maybe not necessarily makers, because I think most makers agree that like any tool is a fun tool. It doesn't matter what it really does. Like if it's something that you can make something with, that's pretty cool. Where you get that kind of feedback and that, or that pushback, I should say, is on YouTube, right? That's YouTube comments and I guess any social media where people are able to try to discount what you're doing. So, I would have tons of examples of this on YouTube comments where I'm making something and using a tool and someone says, well, you know, yeah, you can make it with this tool, but what about if you, you know, made it with a shop that didn't have a whole bunch of specialized tools? Well, I've made most of those things that I make on YouTube before I had these specialized tools. But that doesn't matter, right? I mean, the tool is the tool. It's there for the user and the maker to use to the best of their ability and to push forward the well-being of mankind. that quote is from Henry Ward Beecher, who was an American Congregationalist and a social reformer and a speaker and known specifically for his support of the abolition of slavery. So he was in that kind of late 1800s time period. His sister, if you recognize the name Beecher, his sister was Harriet Beecher Stowe, who was the author who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. Funnily enough, Henry Ward Beecher was a minister and preacher, or, you know, he was a Congregationalist minister for a long time and in the church for most of his life. He really was pushing the importance of the love of God, like that God loves us and he's a God of love, and that the importance of what you do is being kind and loving others, which is, I think, the foundation of the abolition of slavery, right? So remove slavery because we're all people. We all deserve God's love. We're all humans. Funnily enough, later in life, he went through this big trial, I think multiple years after slavery ended, and there was the reconstitution, I guess, of rebuilding the South after around the Civil War and all. And he went through a big trial that was super public and on the front of all the newspapers about a possible adultery case that he had gone through. And so he had apparently spoken out against free love you know, within marriage and stuff throughout his year. And then he was accused of being an adulterer. So who knows, but, but he was pretty famous at the time that he lived. So again, that's Henry Ward Beecher. But again, I just love that quote because really you're talking about how a tool is just an extension of a man's hand, right? Or a and a machine is extension of a tool. It's like building on top of it. See if you can build more machines, you know, more things to make us as men be able to more easily and, you know, and more directly move forward into what we're creating and making, then that's for the well-being of mankind. Now, the debate is still up in the air, I guess, about, you know, how far technology has come and what's good for men and what's not good for men. But, you know, I guess that's all in the eye of the beholder and the user. For me, for instance, I mean, something as like social media, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, those things are ways that I show the things that I'm making and the thing we create, the videos and put out content and, you know, connect with the community. That's what it, that's, you know, that's a big part of what we're doing. And that connection, you know, being able to like show what I'm working on and gain interest and push people over to my channel, which ultimately, you know, goes back into me making money and doing the things that I love to do and trying to teach people about that in a way that's sustainable for me and for my brother. Technology is that social media has its place and it's really good when you're using it in a certain way. And then it can also be really, you know, really negative depending on what you're doing. Once again, I did reach out to the viewers and the listeners on Instagram, the followers on Instagram and on Facebook, and asked a question this week. And that question was, what are your favorite shop tools under $100? Now, originally I was going to say something like, what are your favorite cheap shop tools? But didn't necessarily mean cheap because cheap can be interpreted as, you know, poorly made or it's not worth the money you paid for it. So I decided to reword that as, what are your favorite shop tools under $100? Because for me, in my mindset, a tool that's under $100 is on the cheap side, where I could, you know, I guess relatively easily justify buying a tool that's under $100 as long as I have a use for it, you know, and knowing that I might have a use for it in the future. Now, if there's a tool that's $800 or $1,000 or $3,000, you know, I really have to justify the use of that tool, whether it's going to make me money or it's going to be, you know, something that I can use in the shop that is going to really be used all the time. Now, if it's not something that I'm going to use all the time, it's just something that's fun, well, that's one thing. And maybe in the future, I'll have enough money to be able to buy those tools that I want, you know, and then they'll all come back to be able to hopefully make me money and make what I do sustainable. But in my mindset, $100 is kind of around that limit, you know, something you can just say to somebody, like, what's something you got under $100? Because when it's under that limit, you know, there's definitely a different mindset of purchasing something that is less than $100 than there is that's over $100. So I asked that question and I got a bunch of really awesome feedback from, I guess I had like 30 comments from different people, plus another, I think, 4 or 5 on Facebook. And so I'm going to go through and I'm going to answer you guys' questions. I mean, I'm going to read out your answers to the question because, you know, when Devin and I were talking, I knew he wasn't going to be joining me. I was like, well, let me have the viewers and the followers join me. So I'm going to go through and I'm going to tell everybody the things that were responded to and let you guys know what a lot of people talked about. And there were a lot of repeat things because, I don't know, I guess, especially for the followers, my followers, they're people who are makers and probably, I'm assuming, do similar things that I do, right? You know, you got wood and metal and some forging and some blacksmithing and some, you know, outdoor stuff. So those type of people are, I would assume, relatively going to have similar tools and, you know, and those kind of cheap tools kind of go hand in hand with that across the board. Now, if I was like a, you know, a car channel or a mechanic channel, there'd be a different whole set of tools that would be under $100. So if in your shop, if your shop doesn't align with what I'm saying in from the comments of my listeners and followers on Instagram, well, that's probably because a lot of them are doing the same things that I'm doing. But I would encourage you, if you do different things than I do, and you would like to comment, I would definitely if there's more comments on this after I do this podcast, I'll read out some more on future podcasts. So check it out. All right. So before I start reading out the comments, I wanted to talk a little bit about the tools that I love and the reason why that I have cheap tools and why I love cheap tools. Well, growing up, our family did not have a lot of money, right? So we were relatively on the lower income side of kind of the white American bracket, I guess you would say. You know, four brothers, my mom and dad. And so we were always making things and doing things and making do with cheaper versions of things. Like we would go camping every summer for like a week rather than going on vacations and staying in hotels and flying places for a week. You know, we would do like dinners would be big dinners that are really cheap and easy to make because obviously you're feeding four hungry boys. You know, the things that we would do around the farm that we grew up on, we would like build a lot of things in the woods and, you know, build forts and things and make bows and arrows and everything would be, you know, reused from what we had on the farm. And so that was just like a mindset of like taking things, reusing things and being relatively frugal. So I still had that mindset as an adult, like being, I guess, not like afraid to spend a lot of money, but being really cautious with the money that I spend. So buying tools, obviously I can justify buying tools because I'm using it to, you know, make things for the channel and make things for myself and a hobby. And, you know, some of the stuff is just hobby. Some of it's more specific to, the work that I do on the channel. And so I have a justification of why I need to buy tools. Now I don't buy expensive tools. I don't have any tools in my shop that, were over, I don't know, maybe not even over, I want to say like $300. Now that's just my shop. You know, this is, it's a small shop in my basement. It is what it is. I have the tools that I have and I love making things with them, but you know, I have some bigger tools, some things that have been given to me. Like I have my Revolution grinders that Brian House, you know, gave to me, which are amazing. And they're obviously worth more than $300. I have tools that probably would have been worth more than $300 when they were originally made, but I purchased them secondhand or used, or I got them from, you know, like a, a pawn shop or a flea market, you know? So half of that buying cheap tools is getting the good deal. And then the other half is actually cheap tools, things that are cheap, but can do the same thing as maybe a more expensive tool. Like, I don't really want to go into it because there's a lot of really awesome ones in the comments. So I just kind of want to talk about the philosophy behind buying cheap things. Now, you know, if I were presented with a really good deal on something that was normally really expensive, say a tool that's somewhere between, you know, $3,000 and $5,000, and I was able to pick that tool up for like $1,000 and it would be something that I would definitely use and something that I've been interested in. I don't know exactly what that is, but that I might then be tempted to spend that larger amount of money because I'm getting such a good deal on it. But that being said, you know, I would probably hesitate and be like, well, do I really need that? Am I, you know, what I'm doing in my shop is a hobby. You know, I still have a full-time job. I'm still, you know, we're not, YouTube is not our full-time job. We're not making money, full-time money off of YouTube. You know, and we do the podcast because we love doing the podcast and we're not making a ton of money off the podcast. This is all just because these are things that we love to do. And they also are building, right? There's a potential that it could build to something in the future that could be sustaining. So that's the goal. But until it's actually sustaining and I'm actually making money off of it, and by buying better tools, it could save me time, which would then save me money. So I would earn more money, and then, you know, then it would make it more beneficial to buy a more expensive tool. But until that happens, I'm happy to have lots of tools that have not cost me very much money, but I have the tools that I want to use and need to use in my shop. Yeah, so let me get into reading off some of these comments. There are awesome comments and tons of great tools. We'll start with Clifford Wright 3. He says, my favorite shop tool is the phone, so I can call someone who knows what they're doing, a professional, which I think is just funny. So that's great. And then Papa_Hatch_Axe gave him a laugh and a clap, because I think that was probably one of the, I think that might have been the very first comment, or maybe the first or second comment on it, which was just great. Someone's like, my tool is my phone, because I can call someone who knows what they're doing, which knowing most phones, that's probably an inaccurate statement about it being under $100. So, but yeah. All right. So the next comment is from CPlat3. He says, angle grinder, propane forge, Centaur forge tongs, and toaster oven to heat treat and season cast iron. So I think by that he's meaning that he's heat treating and seasoning cast iron, which is pretty cool. I don't know much about that, but yeah, so angle grinder, propane forge, Centaur forge tongs, and a toaster oven, all under $100. That's pretty good. All right, next we have Jimmy Timbers. Jimmy underscore Timbers says, I find I'm using my Japanese pool saws more and more lately. Kind of bought them on a whim and fell in love with them. Now, I can agree with that 100%. I absolutely love the Japanese pool saws. I have two Harbor Freight pool saws. They're both awesome, and I use them all the time, and they were super cheap. I think they're like, I don't know, $12, $13, something like that from Harbor Freight. And you know, the expensive ones are still under $100. I mean, I actually just put a pair of, Tajima, I think it is. It's the pull saw, and it has like a multiple heads that you can replace, or that you can use the handle to do different heads, different teeth patterns. So you have cross cut and rip saw, but they're different blades, so you can replace it. It's actually one of the ones that my buddy Sean, Crafting Life I Want, he has. And I really like his, so I put it on my Amazon wish list for Christmas, because my wife was like, we need to put some stuff on these wish lists because other people want to know. They start asking what we want, and I want to know what you want. So that's one of those things that I don't necessarily need. Like, I don't need that better pool saw, but it would be nice to have it. It is nice, and it's, you know, sharp. The thing is, like, once they become dull, you can't really resharpen them. But so they're relatively inexpensive, so you just buy another one. Or we could buy more blades. But I do love Japanese pool saws. All right, Whiskey River Trading Company, Brandon from Whiskey River, says Nipex mini bolt cutters. So I think that's crazy. Like, I'm actually surprised that anything Nipex is under $100, and obviously mini bolt cutters, you know, makes sense. Maybe they are, but I have heard all good things about Nipex tools. Mini bolt cutters. I wonder what he's. Oh, maybe, you know, I'm thinking about what he would be doing in his shop or in the Whiskey River warehouse, and maybe it's like to cut strapping on boxes and things for shipments when they're receiving axes and whatnot. So I can imagine using those all the time. All right, we have Matt of Many Trades, and he says Japanese pool saws. So again, like I said, there are a lot of duplicates on this, but I definitely agree with that. Japanese pool saws are irreplaceable. I also love, because they're so thin, you can really do some really awesome work with them. And they're just like usually so sharp and thin, and just that kerf, having that thin kerf is, you know, anytime you're sawing something, I mean, at least in my mind, anytime I'm cutting something or sawing something, I'm always thinking about the size of the kerf, you know, and how much material is being wasted potentially. So being able to cut that really fine kerf and not waste any of your material, that's it. All right. Next up is Great Lakes Axe Company. And he says, my favorite tools are the ones I didn't pay for. Sometimes I'll go to estate sales and be the only one with a trailer, which means I'm the only one capable of bringing home that big old Craftsman lathe. So, yeah, that's definitely the benefit of being somewhere and being in a convenient position to, you know, get a good deal. I think I told you guys recently or a couple months ago about the giant kind of estate yard sale that I went to and got just ridiculously good deal on a lot of things. So I went back. I just reached out to the woman who was running it and asked if I could come back the weekend after the main event, right? I think it was held on like a Saturday and Sunday. And so I reached out to her later in the week and asked if I could come back the following Saturday. And she said, yeah, it's fine. Come on back. You know, I just figured there was just so much stuff, and it was all inside of a shop, you know, so pretty much anything there would have been reusable unless it was trash or, you know, water damaged or just something that I wouldn't use. Like there was a decent amount of, you know, mechanic and like specific things for like electrical and mechanical things and hardware and things that I would never use, or at least it wasn't worth it for me to take it because I don't have anywhere to put it. But I definitely made out on that, just being the person who was able to come back and had a truck, and you know, it was convenient for me to come back and buy a bunch of stuff. So I did get a lot of stuff for really inexpensive when I came back the next weekend. Take a sip break. I'm drinking a Centennial from Founders. I think I was drinking this a couple weeks ago on the podcast. Centennial IPA. What do we got? How much is Centennial? Let's look at our ABV. 65 IBU, so it's not super hoppy. 7.2%. Oh, that's kind of surprising. My wife and I went out and got a couple different beers before Thanksgiving. We had everybody over at our place for Thanksgiving, which was great. We talked about it on the previous podcast, but we did the turkey, and that turned out really good. We did an overnight brine and cooked it. First time ever cooking a turkey, and the turkey turned out really moist and delicious. I mean, that's all you're looking for, right? I mean, it's going to be put onto a plate with a bunch of other stuff and gravy anyway, but yeah, just cutting it up, and it was really moist. The white meat was really moist and the dark meat was really moist, and it turned out great. So, what was I saying? Oh yeah. My wife and I, we went out and got some different beers to have at the house. And we got two different, stouts. We got the Brooklyn, I forget what that one was called. It's a Brooklyn, a dark Brooklyn beer. And then the other one was an Imperial Stout by, I can't remember the company either. But I didn't realize, we didn't look at the time at the alcohol content, but I was taking the two carriers, like the six-pack carriers, out. I was going to take them out and throw them in our recycling bins outside. And I saw on the one that it was 10%. That was on the Brooklyn. And so I showed my wife, I went over to show her like, hey, did you realize that we got, you know, a 10% beer? And then, so I looked at the other six pack carrier, because I was taking them both outside to toss in the recycling, and the other one was 10.4%. So I was like, damn, we got high alcohol content beers. We didn't even realize it, but they were good though. And I guess the stouts, you know, and stouts are so rich in flavor anyway, that I didn't notice the high alcohol content, but they were good. All right. So, yep. On to the next one. This is Drew Lininger. He says a checkering file and file guide. And you can tell from that Drew is a knife maker, young knife maker out on the West Coast, I believe. And yeah, checkering file and a file guide. I can definitely imagine using a checkering file to give that checkering on the spine of the blade, to give you some like traction on that with your thumb, without that file having to do something similar and just kind of eyeball it, or using like a triangle file and put those in there. And I can imagine how much time you can save by using a checkering file. And then obviously a file guide. If you don't know what that is, you know, for knife making, it's a guide that has carbide pieces on it. So that way carbide's hard. And so when you're putting it up against a grinder or a grinding belt, it doesn't grind. So you can clamp this guide down. It's like two blocks of aluminum usually, or steel with the carbide attached to it. And you can clamp it onto your blade wherever you want it, and then you can grind all the way up to that line, so you get really clean. Usually it's used for either plunge lines or cleaning up the when you're fitting up a guard to a handle. You want to get really clean lines and, you know, right angles, so that way everything fits together really cleanly. So a file guide is definitely one of those things that saves a ton of time and gives you the look of professionalism that is not hard to get, but much harder to get if you're just freehanding. So really nice and, you know, really helps for symmetry. All right. Next one we have is Arcburn_design. And he says angle grinder for sure. I can definitely agree with that. He says, but I'm also a big fan of my Dremel tools. I have multiple and I use them a tremendous amount, which is really funny because right behind me on the shop bench, I am down in the shop this evening recording. Usually I'm up in the studio upstairs. And by studio, I mean that's our art studio, the room we have. My house is, it's my daughter's room, my bedroom, and then we have a third kind of small room, which is where all of the art supplies is. That's what I call the studio. So I'm usually recording upstairs in the studio, but today I'm downstairs in the shop, and right behind me, right as I was getting ready to start the podcast, I plugged in my phone and I had to rearrange the power strip a little bit to plug in my phone and the Nikon battery chargers. And so I had to unplug two things that were plugged in. One was the angle grinder and one was my Dremel. So again, I definitely use them all the time. They're like usually just sitting on my bench. All right, so let's see. Next one is Dad's Junk 72. He says, my X-Acto knives and my 1x30 belt grinder. That is definitely true, depending on, you know, what you do in the shop, having a really clean and sharp cutting tool. Like if you're doing any type of masking, you know, you want to be able to make a really clean edge. You know, any type of template cutting, same thing. So X-Acto knives and 1x30 belt grinder. And I can definitely agree with that too, because I use my 1x30, even though I'm still, you know, even though I have the 2x72s and I have the 2x42, I have disc grinders, I still use my 1x30. That's predominantly I use it for stropping when I'm sharpening knives or axes, or I guess technically anything. I have a stropping belt on it that I use polishing compound. I use that because it's thin and it's fast, and I can, like, you know, I can quickly add stropping compound onto it. And so, yeah, that works really amazingly as a strop. And I still have belts for it. So I still occasionally I'll throw on belts and I'll do little things if I'm grinding small things, but usually I go right to stropping for that. But 1x30 is an awesome little grinder, little belt grinder. All right. Next we have, Jonathan's, and he says my MAP gas torch. It's definitely a good one. Something that's under $100, having a handheld torch, any type of, any type of heating that you need to do. I use the MAP gas torches and, or the propane torches. Sometimes I'll do, you know, small heat treating or tempering on things using that if I need to, or if I'm doing like a quick, if I need to bend a piece of steel or something, I'll use that to like pinpoint, you know, cause I don't have like an oxy torch or anything like that in the shop. I just have either those MAP gas torches, propane torches, or my forge. So if I need any centralized heat, I'm definitely using my torches as well. All right. We have, this is Papa_Hatch_Axe, who commented above on Clifford Wright's post, but he says my spoke shave, draw knife, and orbital sander. I can definitely agree with that too. Spoke shaves and draw knives, just something really nice about those tools. Like, you know, I built my draw horse several years back to assist with bow making, but really anytime, you know, I have anything that is taking a lot of pulling force to cut with, I'll pull out the draw horse and use that, because there's nothing more stable than sitting on the bench, clamping down on it and pulling on it. And as you pull, you know, you're using the force of your pulling to tighten, you know, clamp tighter on that piece. So I do that. But, you know, a draw knife and a spoke shave are both great. It's really funny. I've always used a spoke shave, always pulled a spoke shave toward me, right? So you draw it back toward yourself like a draw knife. But I also see people using a spoke shave the other way around often, which is just kind of odd. I mean, I guess I will use it that way sometimes, especially if I'm like hitting a spot in the grain that's coming up or down the wrong way. I can flip it around and do it, but almost always I'm pulling it toward me. So spoke shave, draw knife, and orbital sander. That was, other than I did get like a, what was it, like a 3x24, like one of those handheld belt sanders. I had one of those when I was, I don't know if I still have it. Maybe I do somewhere, but I think they burn out. But I've used them over the years to do different grind. When I first started making knives, that's what I was using to do any type of grinding, was a belt sander, like clamped to a desk or to a bench. But then kind of the first handheld palm was like a palm sander, an orbital palm sander, or a random orbital palm sander, which I just think is a great little sanding tool. I mean, it's something I've used all the time. You know, before I had one, I'd borrow people's all the time. And then I got one, you know, I got a cheap one from Harbor Freight, because, you know, that's what I do. And when Harbor Freight came into existence, I was in love instantly, because a tool and hardware store that's a third or a quarter of the price of bigger box stores and most other tools, it was a dream. It still is a dream. I love it. Obviously, you know, the quality is not there all the time, but you choose and pick and choose which ones are worth the cheap money. Cheap money. All right. Wayforge says calipers. And I definitely agree with that. I have several pairs of, dividers and calipers. And then I have a pair of digital calipers, which are just, I use them all the time. They come out all the time from my drawer, and I use them and put them back, and they're great. All right. Lone Pine Blades says 1, 2, 3 blocks. So many uses. And that's one of those things that I didn't have for a long time. I probably got a set of 1, 2, 3 blocks maybe 2 or 3 years ago. But for the years before that, I saw people using them all the time and always thought, like, dude, that would be really nice to have, using them as a set of parallels or using them as something to hold up a piece of material so you can drill through it if you don't have, a good base to drill into. And, and the uses are wide. Mine stay right on my drill press. But I think I could... there are many more uses for them than I use them for. And there are a lot of really awesome videos out there for people using 1, 2, 3 blocks in lots of different ways. So I definitely agree with that. All right. Next we have Monochrome Shooter. And he says, most definitely my orbital sander, a set of squares of various sizes, hand planes, my hammers, files and rasps, a multimeter, Weller soldering station, and many more. So he's got all sorts of stuff. And he says, I believe a number of good quality tools for enthusiast workshops can be bought for under $100 each. And he says, now that I look around, hardly anything except for my power tools is over that amount. And I agree with that, right? That's the thing. It's like when I asked the question, it was more about like, what things do you love because they're right around you and they're cheap and you use them all the time. But really, honestly, so many things in shops are under $100. And, serve a purpose that's just hard to pass up. All right, next we have Providence Woodworks. It says random orbital sander, Japanese pull saws, Dremel, and an aluminum yardstick. I like that one. Obviously, we got those first three, what other people have said, sander, orbital sander, pull saws, and Dremel. But an aluminum yardstick, I wonder why specifically aluminum. I guess just having that tool there that you can, cut up against. I mean, I use, aluminum and steel yardsticks and rulers all the time because I'm often cutting with X-Acto knives or things along that edge. And so you want to use something that's metal so you don't cut into it. You can use it as a guide. So, but yeah, I definitely agree with that. I have a couple of them here in the shop and I use them all the time. All right. The next one is from AlexSaurus821, and he says, Milwaukee 11-in-1 and a set of mini channel locks, most used tools in my shop. I actually had to look up what a Milwaukee 11-in-1 was because it could be so many things. I was like, well, I know 4-in-1 or 4-in-hand is the file, multi-surfaced or a the teeth, the higher lower grits on 4 different file and rasp grit or aggressiveness. Man, that took a while to get out. That's the 4-in-1. That's something I'm common with, but I wasn't exactly sure what the 11-in-1 was. So I looked it up and it's a adjustable, or I would say it's a screwdriver or a hand tool screwdriver body with adjustable and changeable heads. So, probably like multiple sizes of flathead, multiple sizes of Phillips head, and then whatever else, bit drivers, things like that. So that's the Milwaukee 11-in-1. And then channel locks. Yeah, I definitely have multiple pairs of channel locks or, and use them all the time. Channel locks and also, what do they call it? Vice grips. There's another ones that I have lots of. All right. Next one is BZBSH, and he says angle grinder. And there you go. Another one. Another person for angle grinder. I've found that's a lot of people are all about the angle grinder. And I agree 100%. Stark Franklin says my cheap plastic and brass dead blow from Northern Tool. That's really good. I've had a few different dead blows over the years. And I have one of the Harbor Freight ones, the orange ones with, you know, I think mine's a 2 pound dead blow. And it is such a nice tool. I mean, having that tool that can, that, you know, doesn't have any bounce back and is also soft faced. And I use it for hanging axes predominantly. But anything that I need to hammer on where I need to get a decent amount of weight and, you know, not a lot of bounce back, and I don't want to mar the surface, that plastic headed dead blow is really good. So cheap plastic and brass dead blow. Is it plastic and brass? That's cool. All right, next we have Cheap Guillotines, and Cheap Guillotine says, nothing crazy, but I salvaged a 1 pound brass machinist mallet from my grandfather's stuff after he died. It's on the third handle now, and with any luck, it'll see me to my grave. That's really cool. I mean, there's like a brass machinist hammer. That's really nice. You know, having something that's softer than steel that you can use to hammer with, is really nice. So that's cool. And I love the fact that he got it from, got it from his grandfather's stuff. I have a few things that came from my grandfather as well. So through my dad, things that my dad had for years. And then I got other little hand tools and things. So, all right, let's see. Next is Ice Cube Planet. He says, an estate sale quality draw knife. It makes shaping wood for axe handles, making wooden outdoor campfire tools, debarking logs, scraping varnish off, etc. So easy. And yeah, I definitely agree. I have, I guess with any tool, you know, it's like when you realize you want one, you want something, a tool, and then you look for it and it takes you a little time, and then you find the one you want eventually, or find a good deal on one, then you get it. And then you start seeing them around. So for me, that's draw knives. You know, I wanted a draw knife when I started bow making. So I went on to eBay and I got a draw knife and a Stanley spoke shave as a combo. I think I spent like $23 or something like that, maybe $25 for shipping, for those two. So draw knife and the spoke shave. And then, since then, which was, let's see, that was in 2011, I started bow making. So since then, I probably have bought 10 or 15 more draw knives. I've like used some, given some away, you know, restored some. But, you know, now just having different sizes draw knives and things, I have some that need to be restored, need to be put handles on, some that are usable. But I don't know, they're really nice. Can't beat a draw knife. All right, let me see. Let me get a drink of my Centennial. All right. Next we have Sorensen Customs. He says, my 4-inch precision double square is hands down my favorite and arguably most used tool under $100. 4-inch precision double square. Great for small measurements, laying out right angles, or just short straight lines. Setting tools to square, aligning bolsters before peening. I could go on. Also, another tool worth not skimping on is the Auto Punch. I've been through a handful before I splurged for the $40 version for a good one. A nice magnifying visor is also a great one for us entering middle life. And magnetic work lights are great, and you can't have enough of them. And that, man, those are great ones. All four of those things. Like, I love little squares. I have several of them, you know, little cheap kind of precision squares. So they don't cost a lot, but they are really nice to have. What else do you say? An Auto Punch. I've done the same thing. I've gone through a couple cheap ones. I don't have a $40 one, but I have still a couple cheap ones, and I find myself actually just reaching my regular, you know, center punches and things rather than using the Auto Punches, but maybe getting a good one would be worth it. What else did he say? He said, the magnifying visor. I don't have one of those because fortunately my eyes are still really good and I'm almost a 40. So, you know, I got to take my blessings when I can get them. And magnetic work lights. Yes. I purchased two, magnetic work lights, and actually saw them on a video from Housework, Brian House at Housework. I saw them on his videos and went down and used his affiliate link to buy. I was going to buy one, and then I found that it was significantly cheaper to buy a two-pack. It was like one for $10.99 and two for, you know, a pack of two for $12.99 or something. So obviously I bought two, and I put them in my shop, and probably within a month, I bought two more because they're just like super nice to have. And you'll notice them if you've watched the videos, you notice that they're attached to all of my grinders right above, you know, they're right above my grinders where I work. They're attached. I have one attached to my, one attached to my bandsaw and then one attached to my vise, my bench vise. Really nice to have the light right on the subject where you're working. All right, let's see. Oh, come on, phone. So, I recently dropped my phone in a fire. I was at my buddy Sean's place, and we were having a fire, and I was kind of showing something on my phone, and it was cold out, so my hands were really dry, you know, and, like, kind of slippery. My phone was cold, and I was holding it in my hand and kind of slipping, you know, scrolling with my phone, showing him, and it just slipped out of my hand, and it fell and hit a rock on the edge of the fire ring, and popped into the fire. Like, fortunately, it was like on the edge of the fire, and so I just, obviously, as soon as I dropped it, I saw it going, I reached down and grabbed it and pulled it out. It didn't get burnt or anything, but it did land on the bottom and cracked a little bit right on the kind of the bottom right corner, and it's cracked just a little bit up over my screen, but really not much, which wouldn't bother me at all. I'd leave it, but it's starting to mess with my actual usability of my phone, which I don't know if it's because of the crack or not, but it didn't happen before that, so. But, like, sometimes it doesn't want to scroll. Right now we're having a little bit of trouble. So, okay, next one we have is Walt Beatty. He says, I have a cadre of hand planes which I purchased for $20, $25 or less at flea markets and estate sales. After a restoration and tune-up, they are some of the most wonderful, inexpensive tools I own. And I agree 100% with that, Walt Beatty. I have done the same thing. I have several, lots of hand planes that I bought in different states of disrepair, all from yard sales and estate sales and things like that as well. So yeah, I can agree. You know, we did the video on restoring one of them. So, but I have several of them. They're all up on my workbench shelf. And then I have other ones that are not complete that are around, and I have bits and pieces of ones that I think I'll be able to use to complete other ones in the future. So, I do lots of them. I have lots of them as well. All right, from Fairless Dave, he says, I picked up a little trim router from a well-known German supermarket store. I said that thing is awesome and only $25. It's not a dollar sign, so I'm not exactly sure what that is. I don't think it's a pound. I don't think it's Fairless Dave. Where's Dave from? I should know that because Dave's been like one of our longtime followers and commenters and viewers and subscribers, so. Sorry about that, Dave. I should know where you are. Fairless Dave. Yeah, so trim router, that's one of the things that I've been looking to get. And I haven't, you know, pulled the trigger and bought one just because of the price, right? They're not that expensive, but as soon as it gets over $100, I hesitate to buy it just because do I really need it, right? I have two or three regular routers. But I've been looking for a trim router. So I think that'll probably be my next power tool purchase. Just because, like, having something that portable and small that you can move around with your hand, just like with one hand instead of having to, like, you know, two-hand it. And you know, big routers have a ton of power. And, I mean, the small routers have a ton of power too, but there's something a little bit nicer. It makes it a little bit more handheld and convenient to just pull out and trim something up real quick. So trim router, it's a good one. All right, Old Squirrel Knives says rivet press. That I would love to have. Actually, I think I may have told the story. I think I did when about that giant yard sale where I had a Arbor Press that was there. It was a small one that might be like $60 or $70 because Arbor Presses are expensive. It's surprisingly, it's not the sophisticated things, but they're expensive. I guess maybe because it's the casting. I don't know. But there was a small one and I picked it up and I was like, how much for this? She was like, I don't know. What do you think? I was like, oh, can I get 10 bucks? She was like, all right, sounds good. So I put it down with my things that I was going to get. And I had the kind of a stack of a bunch of stuff and I put it in that pile and I kind of walked away and came back like 3 minutes later and it was gone. And so I'm like looking around, like maybe not 3 minutes, let's say like 7 or 8 minutes later. Right. I'm kind of looking around and I had a bunch of things and just that one thing, the Arbor Press, was gone. It was missing from that pile. I was like, come on. Like, I had this pile here. There's only like 6 or 7 people in this, like, two or three rooms of this shop. So I'm like looking around. I'm like checking for people, like looking at people's hands, and I just could not find it. Oh, I was so bummed. I was like, come on. I asked the woman. She gave me a price. She was happy to sell it to me. It was mine. I should have hung on to it. But yeah, so rivet press, that would be really nice. So, you know, using an arbor press and having like those kind of rivet setting tools or heads or dies for that, I mean, that would be something that would be really nice to be able to just put that rivet really quickly. I'll have to see if I can find a rivet press for under $100. All right, next one is back from the dead UK, and he says, angle grinder, always the angle grinder. There you go, once again, angle grinder, you can't beat it. 4-inch angle grinder. If you guys know that reference, you know that reference. All right, let's see. We have, all right, I have three more. So three more on Instagram, and then we'll pop over to YouTube and put those as well. Wiley Choppers says a can't twist clamps. So K-A-N-T, can't twist clamps. Hands down, the best clamps. I use them to lock my scales down to the tang for drilling, and they absolutely do not budge. That is one of the things on this list that I do not have, and I have been thinking about and looking at getting for quite a long time. And again, that's one of those things where I have a bunch of clamps. I have lots of different clamps. I have spring clamps, and I have twist clamps, and I have F clamps and C clamps. I have tons of clamps, giant clamps and small clamps. I don't have any cant clamps, cant twists. And I see people using them all the time, and they look awesome, and I definitely need to bite the bullet on that and buy some cant twist clamps. All right, next one is 118 Blades, and he says, my $35 angle grinder has been with me for over 12 years and still going strong. And I can agree. I have two of the Harbor Freight Chicago Electric 4-inch angle grinders, and I've had them for years, maybe like 8-9 years, something like that, and they just keep on running. I actually recently bought one for my buddy Sean. I was like, here, because he had same thing, had two angle grinders. One of them died, and then the other one died, and I was at Harbor Freight, and they were on sale for like an extra 30% off of their normal price for like $12. So I just bought one. I was like, here you go. I knew he needed one, and I saw it there. It was super cheap, so I got it for him. All right, so the last one I'm going to read on Instagram, and this is the last one from the list. I read them all. So this person commented on my post, and they said, check out my knives, please, and give them a shout. Much needed. Now, this is, I will shout them out. This is Versatile Bunko, which I think is maybe a knife store. They sell, you know, it's a bunch of different types of knives, and they sell knives and cutting tools and things. So this is not an individual person, but the comment was, check out my knives, please, and give them a shout out. Much needed. So my response to that was, I said, answer the question posted here, and I will probably shout you out. So with a little like kind of winky face, you know, I wasn't trying to be smart. I was just saying, like, I'm not just going to shout you out on when you're commenting on my post about what I'm asking you. I'm asking you a simple question. So then he wrote back and he said, a Skinner with buckhorn and beautiful colored spacers, which again, wasn't not an answer to the question. So I said, that's not an answer to the question, with little laughy faces. Again, trying to just be funny about it. I wasn't trying to be smart. And then he wrote back. He did respond. He said, oh, I get it now, with a laughing face. He said, my favorite cheap shop tool is the clipper I use to hold my knives during tempering and extracting results for Damascus. I don't know what that is. The tool is the clipper I use. Hold my knives during tempering and extracting results for Damascus. I don't know. So, I mean, I was thinking automatically that it was like a blade holder for the inside of a forge, something to hold up, you know, like a ceramic, a little kind of looks like a mini version of a comb with really big, you know, comb teeth on it. And you put blades in between so they'll hold up so they won't fall down on their sides. But I don't know exactly what that is, but there you go. Versatile Bunko. You got your shout out. All right. Let me pop over to Facebook, and I have a couple comments on that. Here we go. Okay. All right. Oh, good. Oh, nice. All right. So I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 comments on Facebook. Obviously, I have a lot more followers on Instagram, because the wonderful thing about Instagram is that you don't need to know the person to follow along with what they're doing. You can just find them with hashtags, or search someone and look them up. You know, it's a great way. Facebook obviously is more about friends and family. So these are people who are friends with on Facebook. So Brian House says, dead blow hammer. Again, you know, that's the second person, and I agree 100%. Dead blow hammer. Sean Porter from Crafting the Life I Want. Brian House is from the House Work channel and the Work For It podcast. Sean Porter from Crafting Life I Want says, magnets, specifically the extendable one from Harbor Freight and the red blocky one with the finger holds. And I agree 100%. Having magnets, especially when you're doing any type of knife making or any type of small, like, you know, any type of, you know, doing any type, anything with small bits of steel or magnetic material where you're grinding and you need to be able to hold onto it without, you know, using your fingers, your next option is like vice grips. So having a magnet to be able to hold those things is really nice. And that extendable one from Harbor Freight is really nice too, especially doing heat treating when you're checking, if you're heat treating in a forge and you're checking for non-magnetic, being able to have that long one to reach in and do that heat treat. So yes, I agree with both of those. Matt Brown, who is the artist who plays our music for our channel and also for the intro song to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. He says, I have a super old rubber mallet that I requisitioned, in quotes, from my dad when I moved. So when he stole, he says, for sentimental reasons. And it has gotten me out of more pickles than literally any other tool that I own. And that's a good one. That's the first time someone said a rubber mallet. We've said dead blow, but yeah, rubber mallet is something really nice. I mean, again, having like a soft face thing that you can bang on something really hard with, that's really nice. So rubber mallet's gotten him out of a bunch of pickles. Nick Tobin, who is Pickle Cutters on Instagram, and that's his knife making. He says, my $2 vintage Stanley punch, and he's got a picture of it here. It's, you know, it's the round punch, tapered on the end, then from about maybe an inch up to about 2 inches above that, it's round, cylindrical and gnarled, right? So it has the texture on it. And then the last like 3/4 of an inch is square. And I have one of those too, and they are just like super nice. I think I have one similar, but his is his nice little vintage Stanley punch, $2. That's awesome. All right, next we have Brian James Cohn, also from the Work For It podcast and B Cohn Knives. And he says, this misting system. And so he has the mist system for knife makers, specifically from Brian House's system. You can go to housemade.us and pick up all sorts of awesome knife making supplies from Brian, specifically things that have to do with 2x72 grinders, Revolution grinders, which I have two of in my shop. Thank you, Brian. And Brian Cohn, yes, says this misting system. So having that misting system that attaches to your 2x72 grinder, so anytime you're grinding any heat-treated steel. So Brian, as a knife maker, will, you know, you make your knives, you profile them, usually do some grinding on the bevels before heat treat, and then you heat treat the knives, and then you got to go back and do all the finish grinding and, you know, cleaning off any type of decarb and, you know, forge scale, things like that, and then also getting down and, you know, having the sharpened knife. After you heat treat, you want to be really careful you don't heat your blades up, because if you heat them up past that tempered temperature, then you're losing the hardness that has been treated into the blade. So having a misting system that mists water on your belt as you're grinding, it keeps your blade cool. And your other option is to grind, stop, dip your blade in water, grind, dip your blade in water, go back and forth, which is, you know, a very common thing. And that's what I do, and that's what most knife makers do. But having a misting system that sprays water on your blade as you're grinding, that is really nice. So that's from Brian Cohn. All right. And lastly, which is the last one that's on here, which is, I was like, oh, that's cool. It's actually my dad, Scott O'Hara. He said, a multi-tip screwdriver, always used, Phillips flip over straight edge, can't live without it, and it's dirt cheap. And I agree 100% on that. And that's kind of like the Milwaukee 11-in-1, but I think it's usually that like orange handle. It's got, you know, it's got two sides that can flip, or you have like two sides that hold two different bits. So it's actually like four total. So you have, you know, a large and small Phillips and a large and small flathead. So a multi-tip screwdriver. And I really agree with that. Also, like if you can get, you know, you can get things, like I said, similarly to the Milwaukee 11-in-1, you can have a bunch of different bit heads that fit into the top of it, like a bit driver. But yeah, that screwdriver. I have one that stays in my shop and one that stays in my tool belt for any time I'm doing anything out of the shop. So those are awesome to have. And hard to live without. All right. Well, that is it. That is the list. That is over 35 comments from you guys. Lots of awesome cheap tools. Cheap tools, things under $100, things that we can't live without. And like a few different people said, you know, the majority of the tools in our shop are things that are under $100. And they, you know, they all just build up to be able to give you the ability to make whatever you want. And that's kind of always my goal. I'm like, I want to be able to do it all. I want to be able to make anything I want, you know? So whether that's cutting apart wood or metal, or putting together wood or metal, or, you know, like fabricating all the stuff, anything that I want to have, anything that I'd like to have, I'd like to make. Now, obviously that's within reason. I'm not going to make like computers and gigantic, you know, electric machines and things, but, you know, within reason, I like to make things that I know that I could make, and having the tools to do it gives you that ability. All right, so we are coming to the end. I'm going to do a recommendation. So my recommendation this week is Douglas Pryor. Now, I've recommended Douglas before in the past, but he is coming to the end of a big project. So Douglas Pryor is a raising and chasing artist. So if you don't know what raising and chasing is, it's when you take sheets of steel or metal and you hammer from the back and from the front to create 3D images. So basically it's like a low relief or a relief sculpting where you're working on a flat surface, but you're building out from it. So he'll shape and, you know, chase and raise by hammering steel forward or back from that surface. And he is working on a gigantic alligator that's kind of coming out of the ground. It almost reminds me of kind of like a dinosaur skeleton kind of coming out of the ground, almost like it was found in the ground, because it's kind of half in a flat surface and half coming out of it. But it's like a life-size alligator, and he's been working on this project for a bunch of months. Like I would say at least, I don't know, like 6 months, 8 months, maybe a year. I feel like I've been watching him do this for a long time, and he's working on, like, I guess they call the scutes, right? All the little, the scales on an alligator. And so like just incredibly, incredibly detailed work that he does. And just the fact that he can do it and he's not like busting through places. He's like heating up different spots, hammering, you know, shaping, that's that raising and chasing. Just incredible, incredible work. So go check out Douglas Pryor. It's at Douglas_Pryor on Instagram. And see what he's doing. Go back and look through his Instagram posts, because he's got these beautiful posts of work that he's done. But, you know, you can kind of follow along with this project he's been working on for a bunch of months on this gigantic alligator. It's coming to the end, and it's looking awesome. All right, guys. Well, that is it. We are coming right up on 1 hour. I actually thought I would only do probably like a half an hour, because I was just going to read through the comments and I would have been done. But you never know. You start talking, you start getting into things, and it just goes on. So as a teacher, when I'm used to talking in front of students for, you know, hour-long classes, sometimes it comes a little more easily than I'd like to just ramble on. But, you know, it's always more fun to do it with Devin, but I didn't want to take the week off, and so I figured I'd just reach out to you guys and get a whole bunch of great content to talk about on the podcast. So hopefully I hit on some of the things that you have in your shop that are, you know, 100% worth it and that are under $100. I'm just looking around and I have all sorts of great things, and maybe look out for some videos coming out in the near future about some of these things. So, all right, guys. Well, that is it. I just want to say thank you so much for everyone who listens and comments and participates in the community that we are all part of, and that we try to push the art of craftsmanship, you know. It always sounds kind of cheesy, but it really is about the community. I really, really enjoy the community that we're in and the people and, you know, just the camaraderie and the flack talk and just, I mean, everything. It's just really fun to be in a community of makers and people who like this type of thing and who support each other. And, you know, that's one of the things you find about makers, is that, you know, makers will support each other. They'll buy each other's things. They'll push people. They'll shout people out. They'll repost stories, because really we're all kind of in the same boat. We all make things. We all maybe are trying to make money off of the things we make, and we're pushing each other to do better. So, you know, I know it sounds cheesy and I say it all the time that we're all part of the community, blah, 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 but really I do believe it. And I love that part of what we do. You know, it's the reason why I read over the comments and the reason why I post things on Instagram, because, you know, Instagram doesn't make me any money. I'm posting there because it's really fun to be part of this social community, right? This social network of people who can show things and look at things, and you get some feedback and makes you feel good about yourself. And, you know, maybe you screw something up and you show that and people give you some feedback and help you out. So really, the community is there. So thank you guys all so much. It really makes a difference for listening and commenting and being a part of this community. Yeah, that being said, definitely make sure you go over to YouTube and follow us there. I know it's been a while since we put out videos. We keep saying we're super busy. We are super busy, and we want to put out more videos, but, you know, sometimes you just got to do what you're doing. It's not that we're not making them, or it isn't we're not making them. It's not that we don't want to make them. It's just that we are doing a lot of other stuff. So just trying to, you know, get things together. Devin, you know, has got his baby girl, so that helps, that, you know, kind of inhibits some stuff more often now. And same thing with me, like I'm taking classes and there's just lots of things happening. So we're very busy and we are doing our best. You know, Devin's been posting, like, we're getting back out there. We are doing more videos. We are recording some stuff. So there will be things coming out relatively soon. So keep your eye out for that, but go over to YouTube, follow us there at The Art of Craftsmanship, or The Art of Craftsmanship on YouTube. You can follow both Devin and I on Instagram. Mine is The Art of Craftsmanship and Devin is The Art of Camera Guy. If you don't follow Devin, go follow him, because he does post lots of fun things. He's posting things about, like, you know, the things we're doing. He does great, like, candid pictures of me all the time. I don't ever notice it. And he's like taking a random picture. He'll be like drinking a beer and watching me work for 20 minutes when he's doing something that he's already filmed 20 minutes of. And so he'll post those things all the time. So check him out as well on Instagram. And then if you guys want to support us and support the maker community like we are, you know, our part of the maker community, you can go over to patreon.com/theartofcraftsmanship. We talk about how when we started that, we were hesitant to promise things. And that has always been kind of tough, right? Like, people are there and they're supporting us financially, you know, with money, and we're not really giving a ton back outside of what we do on YouTube. Now, it was hard for us to decide to do that, but we had a lot of encouragement from different people who were like, people want to support you. They don't have to continually support you forever. They might want to just give you a little money here and there. They want to support you. And if they have money to support you with and they want to give it to them, you have to give them an avenue to do it. So that's what that is there. But really, I mean, that money goes back into what we do for the channel and gives us the ability to make more content for you for The Art of Craftsmanship on YouTube. So that's really what it's about. That's why we're, you know, if you want to go over there and you support us, it's because you like what we do and you appreciate it, and you figure out there's another way that you want to support us, and you can do it financially. And if you can't, that's perfectly fine too. Like, just be there, just watch along, just enjoy it, comment, let us know, you know, participate, comment on Instagram, just be part of the community. It really is important. But yeah, if you feel like you want to support us in a different way, you can go over to Patreon and support us there. All right, guys, that's it. Another hour in the books, another Art of Craftsmanship podcast. This has been really fun. We're on episode 70, which is crazy, all the way up to 70. So we're getting there. We're getting closer to 100. It's crazy. I don't know what we'll do for 100, but we'll have to do something really fun. Probably do a brothers podcast, of course. I don't know. Maybe we'll have some more local people around, other YouTubers and Instagrammers and podcasts and that. Maybe we'll get like a big group of people together and do like a giant one. I don't know. We'll see. But until then, thank you guys all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.